No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. This week, the president spoke to the nation about the possibility of another armed conflict in the Middle East. As the situation now stands, military action is on hold. However, things could change at any moment, and this got me thinking about the men and women that we ask to carry out these missions. We honor them on Memorial and Veterans Day, but then, like the old adage, they seem to just fade away. The Center for American Progress estimates that currently more than a million veterans are at risk of becoming homeless. In fact, 1 in 7 homeless people has served. In addition, almost a third of veterans between the ages of 18 and 24 are unemployed. Nearly 1 million veterans reported being in poverty, and more than $31 million in food stamps were distributed through military commissaries in 2012. Why are so many of these brave men and women in poverty, homeless, and dependent on assistance after they have served their country faithfully? That is the focus of our show today. What can we do to make things better for Americans' veterans? To get the discussion started, we are pleased to have some very special guests with us today who are involved in doing some creative things to help veterans across the board. We are pleased to have Tammy Lambert, Tyrone Sims, and Josh Rathod, who all work with organizations that help veterans in different ways. Before we talk to our guests, let me introduce my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, who joins us from the great state of Arizona. Hi, Kathleen, and as always, thanks for helping get the conversation started.
Oh, good evening, Senator. I'm Kathleen Gomez, and welcome to Shadow Politics. Today, we want to have a conversation with America, so please, please call us at 888-429-5471, or you can Skype us at BBS Radio 2. So we can get the conversation started because we really want to hear from you all out there. I know that so much of Americans really respect the job and the sacrifices that our veterans and soldiers do. So please feel free to call in. And because we have some great guests here. Right, Michael?
Yeah, absolutely. Before I introduce our guests, let me thank Congressman Juan Vargas of California for being the 54th co-sponsor of the D.C. statehood bill. We appreciate your support, Congressman.
Now I'm
pleased to introduce Tammy Lambert with the VFW, Tyrone Sims, President of Veterans and Military Families for the Democratic Party of Virginia, and Josh Rathod of the BF Wounded Warriors Trust. Thanks for being with us today, guys. Tammy, let me start with you. I know you are a third-generation soldier. Thank you for your service. Tell us how you think being a soldier today has changed from those who have served in the past. What new obstacles do you think soldiers face today that they didn't used to face?
Well, thank you. Senator Brown, first let me say thank you for having me, and thank you, Kathleen, for having me as well. I would say that they had challenges and obstacles in the past when my father served and when my grandfather served, but they were different. Today, I think a lot of the challenges that we're facing and that we're coming back from Iraq, because we have a lot of budget cuts. You know, with the economic downturn, things have changed tremendously. So we require more. However, I guess Congress has not gotten it. They don't understand that we need the money to support the troops as they come back. We have challenges with homelessness. We have challenges with health care. We have challenges with our soldiers coming back and not being able to get their benefits or their claims. There are a number of issues that are facing us, and it requires Congress to allocate more dollars to support the veteran as they return. So those are the major issues that are affecting the veterans, I believe, today.
Well, you know, I'm sorry, Kathleen, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I remember when I was up on the Hill, we used to call a lot of these Congress people who are very, very for getting us into war, but never wanted to really fund personnel issues. And they were, you know, the doves and the hawks, and the hawks, you know, want to go to war, but very few of them served. In fact, a lot of them took that 4F, you know, they didn't serve for the country. And I think it's so important, because it's like kind of being a little bit pregnant or whatever. When you serve out there and you're in war, there's nothing like it, and you understand what's needed. And I think that that's the disconnect in D.C. They want to be pro-military, but a lot of them haven't served, so they don't understand the issues.
That's a great point, Kathleen. That's the reason why that I applied for a fellow with George Washington University called the Second Service. And what they do is they prepare veterans to run for office. I think we know better what we need, right? And so I think that we have less representation in Congress than we ever had before. So I think it's necessary for more of us to run. I think that innately we are leaders. I think the military teaches us to be great leaders. And I think that we can serve our needs better than someone who doesn't really understand, you know what I'm saying, the challenges and the obstacles that we face, you know, in war and coming back from war and what our families face while we're away.
Absolutely. Well, yay! People are going to run. Yes, yes.
Yes, and I think that's an important point, is that, you know, nobody goes into military service for the money. Nobody goes into it for the glamour. Nobody goes into it, you know, you go into it to serve. So that's an important thing that you've already gotten out of the way, Tammy, is that you've shown a commitment to other people and your commitment to service. And that's really what politics should be about, because unfortunately a lot of us in politics forget that we're here to serve you. We end up unfortunately trying to serve ourselves, and that's the wrong attitude. So I know that I was lucky enough to get to lecture in the coursework that Tammy is talking about, which I just think is a wonderful idea to train veterans to get into politics and public service. And I know that Tammy has told me that she's shying away from politics and going into to public service, but I'd ask her to reconsider, because I've met her and I think she's dynamic and dedicated, and I want to volunteer to be your campaign manager. You know what they say? You know what they say about free advice, Tammy? It's worth what you pay for it.
That's right. But, you know, we're definitely campaign hacks, Michael and I, so we'll come out there and help you out. And
yeah.
And let me give a shout to Taryn. Taryn, I know you were a captain in the Army, and that you are a graduate of West Point. And so, of course, let me thank you for your service. And I worked for Congresswoman Pat Schroeder, and in 1985 we actually put in a bill with 10 different provisions for military families. And it was called the Military Family Act of 1985, giving an actual office in the Pentagon. Because one thing that I didn't realize is families. I mean, there are very few soldiers running around that are not married. I was back in the 1980s amazed how many soldiers also had custody of their children. They were single parents. And the lack of support for military families. I mean, I think it's gotten better, but I think there's still a lot to be done. And so I know that you work with military families. Can you tell us what the challenges are for them, you know, in this day and age, and how we can help the military families, you know, deal with all the things with their loved ones coming back hurt or just away for a long time and all that stuff?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. The whole veteran military family, the military family aspect is pretty dynamic. Right now, the challenge we're facing, that I think that's the fear, as most people agree about, is the effect of sequestration and also the effect of us not actually being in war anymore. Congress is now, you know, since we're now preparing to leave Afghanistan in 2014, already the conversations have begun on decreasing the budget for family services, the medical treatment for service members and their families, and all those sustainable programs that keep families going. Another conversation actually that's already begun whispering in the Hill is when they want to cut off the 9/11 GI Bill. Most service members have no idea that these conversations have already begun. A lot of the policy wonks who aren't veterans sadly believe that it's okay to begin having these conversations to cut these fundings because, as they state, we're no longer at war. But I believe what has kind of been stated in the earlier part of this conversation is, you know, we're a volunteer army, Marine Corps, Navy, Air Force. Right? We're a volunteer force now. They're not conscripted. There's no draft. And so men and women are serving this nation of their own free will, for love of country, and maybe for possible other reasons, but mainly for love of country. And the only thing they really ask for is to be taken care of. You know, no one's asking to build a fort at Bentley, but at the same time, they need to be able to afford to live.
Exactly.
That's pretty much the minimum that we're all asking for. And sadly, you know, with a small handful of selfish congressmen who have the entire Hill in a headlock, people think the current state of sequestration in fiscal year 13 was bad. 14, it's going to be a lot worse. And programs are going to be slashed in ways that people can't imagine. And when they do, hopefully there are some changes in their leadership. But sadly, as yourself, Ms. Gomez, and Senator Brown know, bad things occurring on the Hill don't necessarily equate to needed change with certain elected officials. But, you know, it's interesting, ma'am, when you mentioned the legislation you all got passed in 85, because that all stems from a very bad culture that was occurring in our force that a lot of people don't know about. When the leadership got together to put money into the places where it was needed to support our family members and increase the quality of life of our soldiers, our Marines, our airmen, and our sailors, because it was very bad. And for those of us who've been around for a long time, I myself am a brat as well, we just want to keep that quality of life as high, sustainable as possible. Not asking for a goal, but just asking for us to be able to live and for our children, our families, to prosper.
And, you know, I'd love to talk to you, have you on for the show, because I think the public doesn't understand when, you know, nowadays a soldier is not just a single guy or a single woman. It's a family that's involved in it. And when he goes overseas, he takes his family. You know, there's a status of forces agreement that says, okay, we have to employ so many locals. And then they put him in housing or they put him in referring the families when they go back to the States. And one of the reasons I started the Military Family Act is we followed this family who actually the child, I think they were sent to San Francisco by the Germans that were at Kaiserslautern. And, you know, it's the most expensive real estate. They were only had $700 a month. They had a large family. And one of the oldest went out and actually committed suicide so that his brothers and sisters could have food to eat. And that's when I started investigating and then went and saw how soldiers live in Georgia, you know, and overseas. It just was appalling. And, you know, I can say that I probably wasn't very much pro-military before those years. Once I met the people that serve overseas or serve in all our branches, I became so proud and I committed myself to help them out because it is amazing the great people and how they're willing to die, and that's what it really is, to make sure that my life and my children's life is free. So I think that everyone listening to this program, we've got to fight for the military families. They've given and sacrificed, and you got to talk to your congressional leaders, and we got to get ourselves motivated and mobilized, because I am actually for decreasing foreign aid to other countries so that we can put that money back into our military families. So I'm sorry.
Well, let me tell you that, yeah, it's absolutely true. I don't know that if you're not from a military family, whether you truly understand this. But my brother, my only brother, was an F-111 pilot. And he served during the Vietnam War for a brief time, but most of the time he served his 20 years. We were not in combat, but we worried about him every day in the cockpit of that plane. You know, the every time he climbed into that plane, we worried about him. And I don't know that everybody realizes that families serve as well as the family member who's actually in uniform. And when you talk about extraordinary people, I talked briefly with Captain Sims before the show about this, but my brother was an instructor at the Air Force Academy when I was in college, and I used to go out there when I was in college and see what these people would go through. And, Taryn, I don't know how you did it. I mean, there are absolutely amazing people that go through our service academies. They take a full academic load, and they take an equivalent amount of military credits. It's just amazing that anybody makes it through the process. And then these amazing people come out. Many of them serve their entire, you know, most of their professional careers in the military, and we don't treat them well. So we need to put an end to that. We need to treat families better, and we certainly need to treat the people who have served, our veterans, better. And thanks, Taryn. I know you must be an amazing person just for having made it through those 4 years. Like I told them before the show started, I could barely get out of bed to make it to my 10 o'clock class. And most of these guys in Colorado Springs had done more before 10 o'clock in the morning than I did all day.
Or all week.
Or week. Or month. Anyway, Josh, thanks for being with us today. Tell us about the BF Warrior Trust, because this is one of the most creative ideas I've heard of, to use music to help veterans. I really think it's genius, and you guys are doing a lot of good things with it. So tell us what the BF Warrior Trust is, will you?
Yes, sir. And, of course, first of all, thank you for having us on the show.
Oh, sure.
So basically, to kind of explain it, I guess I have to give a little preface of where, you know, the organization came from and whose idea was to start it. My executive director, his name's H. David Myers, he was actually a world-renowned oboist before he started the BF Wounded Warrior Trust. And so, you know, he was kind of living the playboy lifestyle, living it really big. He was actually a vet as well, but the really pivotal moment in shifting all of his efforts to helping out wounded vets was when his brother was in Vietnam and in the, you know, the coordinated Tet Offensive. And people who know a lot about Vietnam know that that was one of the bloodiest times of what was going on over there. And so it's the sort of thing, there is 150 soldiers in his brother's group, and within the first 10 minutes of the Tet Offensive, there was only 9 soldiers left at the end of that. Wow. So, as you can imagine, you know, his brother came back with some pretty bad PTSD, some TBI, and from that point onward, he kind of devoted his efforts to helping that wounded vet. So, that's like a little bit of a background to explain where the music part comes from, and to explain how that translates into what we're doing now. We put on some pretty huge concerts. You know, these concerts, I mean, they raise money to, you know, make housing happen, better housing, you know, to pay those medical bills that they just can't support. And, but besides that, it also creates a culture, a community, which, is arguably just as important, if not more so. Because we have regular people looking forward to coming out, seeing the same faces that love them. And so that's kind of, you know, the culture of what's going on. And at this point in time, we're definitely doing a lot of expansion to do a lot more even. We're partnering up with a lot of different organizations, like in D.C., actually, the Hometown Heroes. organization. They do a great job of hooking up vets with, you know, jobs. They do a whole slew of things. So we are just so down to support these guys by creating not only a community where they can feel loved and where they can, you know, come out and experience life in a very, you know, comfortable, supportive manner, but also, you know, we're going to devote all our resources to getting them whatever they need to enable them to provide for themselves, their families, and really feel fulfilled in, you know, living a healthy lifestyle.
Well, you know, I think it's really cool that you're doing something so positive and using music to do it. We just had the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington, and, you know, Martin Luther King said it was music that moved the movement. You know, there was hard work and there were other things that moved the civil rights movement, but it was music that kept it going. And I think that music just plays such an important role in so many things we do. And it seems to me that this is a really positive thing to do for veterans, not only to you know, raise money, but as you say, to develop this environment for them, where they feel, safe and nurtured and appreciated. And so I think that's really cool. Although I must tell you that I'm stunned to find out that the Playboy lifestyle is led by oboists. You know, I played the drums when I was in high school because I thought chicks like drummers. Now I find out, yeah, I should have played the oboe.
There you
all
go.
About the oboe, although he'll tell you that it's the tough life. I mean, it's not easy being an oboist, that's what he'll tell you.
Well, it's true that it's easier to carry around a pair of drumsticks than it is an oboe. I agree with you there.
Josh, one question I had with the music, is it mostly classical symphonies and that type of thing?
Well, because of our connections with, you know, the National Symphony Orchestra, as well as, you know, a lot of groups at the Kennedy Center, mm-hmm, that is just readily available to us. But in recent years, we've had some big, bigger concerts with, I don't know if you guys know, they rattle off names to me, and I don't know if, you know, people generally know, but I'm a director, but I'm fairly young, so my music taste and even awareness aren't really...
How young are you?
I'm actually 22. Yeah,
oh, my 22. Gosh. So you just... So. There's a lot of songs. Yeah. That's you're like my son's... I'll never forget. He was telling me this great, great song, and then it ends up being Kansas, which came out in the 70s, and he was shocked that I knew it, you know? He was like, what? You can't know this song. So, yeah, I can understand, but... But that's great. So you do concerts that are more with, say, would you say like your peer group? I mean, you know, music in your genre or whatever you would say?
Well, no. Basically, we're always looking to partner with new people. Okay. You know, just I guess like a recent, you know, thing that we've done is if people, I mean, we're bridging the gaps. I don't know if you guys know of Dean Martin.
Oh, yeah, I just was listening to it.
All right. Come over there and slap you, Josh.
Making sure. Yeah, but Dina Martin, wonderful woman, she's actually done a lot of stuff with us, and she's doing something with us in November. That's actually going to be for Fallen Warriors on November 13th. But it's really varied. And basically, my executive director, he always jokes, I'm pretty sure he knows Beyonce. And so he's just like, we're eventually going to get Beyonce in here, but I don't know if Jay-Z likes me that much. So,
hey, that's funny.
No pressure here, Josh, but yeah. Kathleen and I do a mean karaoke.
Yeah, volare. Oh, there I go.
Deal. Just the cap.
Wow.
The deal. Yeah, beautiful. But Kathleen's the one that wears the little hat.
Hey, I can be a backup dancer.
There you go. I tap, too. Deal. So weird deal. Okay. Tammy, you know, you guys were talking about that you met Michael in Senator Brown in a class at DW, which is the curriculum is geared to encourage military personnel to go into politics and stuff like that. I mean, how did you get involved in that? And please tell me that you'll reconsider it, because even when we talked to you, some college students, they were like, I don't know if I want to run. But we need people like you guys to run, because – that's the problem with the country. We have to have people who understand everyday life and what the issues are to actually be the ones who help make policy. So how did you get involved in that?
I met a gentleman named Darren Phelps. Actually, he's the chief of staff of the program. And we talked for a long time. And he was telling me about the program. And I did a lot of work, I just finished a program in Virginia called the Political Leaders Program with UVA. And he said, Tammy, you really need to try this program. I think it'll help you develop into a candidate. And I was like, well, Darren, I don't think I really want a candidate, but I love campaign management. I love issue campaigns, advocacy campaigns. And he said, Tammy, I think this is for you. So I applied, and it's kind of, you know, a rigorous application process, but I got accepted. And in my first semester, I had a great teacher, an instructor, Mark Messner. And Mark has a way of convincing you that you can do anything.
That's
you
a good
can run
to
for
have.
President. You can run for anything. So, and Mark was the person who really, I guess, for a lot of us who were veterans, that we said we were interested in politics, but we didn't necessarily know how we could make a change. And Mark helped us understand that we could really run for office and that we could make a difference becoming candidates. And then a part of the program, it brings in candidates who have already run for office, one, and they talk to us about the challenges they faced in Congress all the time. I mean, you know, and so that's kind of the skinny of it. It's a great program, and it's a new program for George Washington, and I think that it's very successful. They've had several people who've just done their boot camp, which is a veterans campaign boot camp, and they've just did the weekend program, went back home, run for local office or state office, and actually won. So, it's a very successful program. So,
Some of us might think you're a little bit of a sadist because you've already been in combat, and then this would just be another type of combat, which would probably, like we were talking, it's hard to decide who's the friend and who's the enemy, you know. So I think it's a great challenge that you're doing, and I really, really encourage you to run because you just sound like you've got it all together, and you understand the issues. And I tell you, you know, Michael and I have been on the Hill, and we've worked in politics a long time, and it's just, I think the public feels like a certain way about politics, like that's the last thing you want to do. And we really get people who have no idea what the issues are, what the answers are, and really what they're there for, which is like Michael said, Sid Brown said, it's to serve the people, not to have an agenda and, you know, promote themselves. So I think it's great. We'll just keep on encouraging her, right, Michael? We'll make sure she runs.
First, let me just reiterate some of the things that Tammy said about Mark Meisner. Mark is a guy that I've known for years, and he ran for Congress in Indiana, I know, and he is very encouraging to his students. And I think it's because, as Kathleen could tell you, we've both been in politics a long time, and there are a lot of good people in it, as well as people that are self-centered and self-oriented, and the good people do a lot of good. So we always want to encourage good people to get into it. I was telling Tammy before we got on the air that I was on Capitol Hill. I was working for the Democratic Committee, actually, when for the first time the majority of Congress were people who had not served in the military. From 1945 until early 1980s, the majority of people on Capitol Hill who served in Congress, in the House, had military backgrounds. And this is becoming less and less and less. And, you know, we all know a lot of the famous ones like John McCain and Bob Dole and Jimmy Carter. You know, all these people served. John Kerry, there have been a lot of them in the past 60 years, but unfortunately there are less and less of them, and it's important for people who have that experience to be in a position to make decisions that affect the lives of so many people in America. You know, today, the veteran population in America is close to 23 million people. That's an awful lot of people that have served. And even though service in Vietnam is the highest among veterans, the service in the Gulf Wars are not far behind. More than almost 6 million, 5.6 million veterans come out of the Gulf War. So they're new veterans with new problems, and we need people that understand those problems.
And I would like to say that I think what people, you know, and what these leaders think is they commit us to going in overseas into a war, but it's a commitment that doesn't end when the war is over. It's like right. a lifetime commitment with these military families that has to follow them throughout their life. And that's when they decide, oh, well, we don't have to, you know, we can cut costs and personnel. I mean, they love to do that and go for research and development. But without the soldier and without his family, without him knowing or she knowing that the family is taken care of, they can't do their job. And that's, and it, we need the people, you know, we need the people to carry through whatever our mission is. So, you know, these leaders have to understand that it doesn't end with a soldier when they get out of the military or when they come back. It is to follow them, the commitment that we should make to them for the rest of their life and for their family.
And it's not only good for the soldiers and the families, it's good for America. We look at what the GI Bill did after the Second World War. It built the greatest post-war economy the world has ever known. I mean, educating soldiers, getting them into the workforce, giving them the support they needed to succeed, and look how many of them succeeded. I mean, we could go on for years about all the success stories of veterans of the Second World War, so we do need to do that. Captain Sims, what policy initiatives are you pursuing these days? And we understand you've got a new book coming out. So tell us what you're doing as far as policy goes, and tell us about your new book.
So with policy, I think right now the biggest thing I'm focused on, because as you guys know, I don't know if the listeners know, there's a gubernatorial race occurring in Virginia right now. So obviously,
Kathleen and I used to work with Terry McAuliffe. Do we not, Kathleen? I think we used to steal lunch money from
him. Yes, we did.
Yes, we did.
Back in the day when he was just a guy sitting at a desk next to John Warner, who is the senator. And
Mark Warner.
I'm sorry.
John Warner was the governor.
Yeah, right. The governor, right. But Mark Warner, who's an old friend of ours, and we were all kind of at the same level at one time. I don't know what happened to us, but they definitely went on to better stuff.
Something happened to us. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Captain Sims.
No worries. And so, obviously, the level of policy that I have, these candidates, Terry's not the only one. I deal with all the candidates with respect to ensuring their policies are sound. It's focused at the state level. But the biggest issue we have, because of the fact that we are an all-volunteer force, large contingents of those who deployed are reservists and National Guardsmen. And so what we've discovered during this 11-year period worth of fighting and continuous deployments of our guardsmen and our reservists was that there is this gap between VA services at the federal level and state-run VA services. And so a large part of the policy that we focus on is working to close those gaps, to get those veterans and their family members plugged into the right programs, because all the programs that are needed pretty much already exist. It's just the fact that people don't know where to go, because once they conduct the reverse SRP, which means come back, you know, take off their uniform and go home, there's no one really to guide them to where they need to go, seek the care that they need, or even just access programs that they can use to uplift themselves and their families. Another aspect of policy we focus on is supporting service members who are stationed within the Commonwealth.
And I pushed this nationally, too, to folks who are running for Congress and Senate in other states. But, you know, making it so that service members whose kids want to apply to college can apply at as state residents of the state that they're currently stationed in, because it's not the family's fault that they live where they live, right?
Right.
And things of that nature. So, I guess we'll Senator Brown mentioned my book. I will say my first novel just got re-released on the 10th of September, entitled With Honor in Hand. I actually just finished writing the third novel. I'm writing a four-part series. I just finished writing the third novel 2 weeks ago. I'm currently editing that. But With Honor in Hand, focus at West Point. It's about two mercenaries that take on this mission to get to West Point, which causes them to have a moral dilemma. So I write on two aspects. One, the mercenaries dealing with the fact that they have this mission. And then the other is I write a story about a particular cadet so that the readers have come to learn what they may lose if the mercenaries go through with the mission.
Wow.
Well, that sounds interesting. And you guys from the academies, as I said earlier, just overachievers, boy. Your third novel, that's great.
How old are you? Also, I want to ask a question. How old are you?
How old am I, ma'am? I'm 36.
Oh, gosh.
Sick.
We Kathleen, should have gone to military. Yeah.
I also want to tell you, Captain, that my brother, as I told you, was an F-111 pilot, and he's president of a college in Ohio. And in Ohio, they have passed a law. They passed a law last year, which is that any veteran can go to college in Ohio and pay in-state tuition no matter where he lives. As long as he or she is a veteran, no matter where they lived, they can go to and pay in-state tuition in Ohio. I think that ought to be true in every state. If you've served your country, you ought to be able to go and get a college education and not have to pay extra for it.
And I think it should be given to the children because, you know, I know that Michael and I are putting, you know, I have one in college, he's going to have two. And it is outrageous what these universities are you know, paying for in-state even. So the fact that I know how military, it was always amazing to me how military families will, you know, be in one place for maybe 9 months to the most 2 years sometimes. And it's very hard on the children. And they should, if they want to go to California, but they're living in Iowa, they should be paying in-state. I mean, I know that we give that sometimes. I know a small college in Cochise County is giving that kind of benefit to Mexican students who want to come over. And if we can give it to other people from other countries, we should give it to the children of the veterans so that they can get educated because it's so expensive now. So I think that's a great idea. And anyway, we can help you. Please let us know.
Hey, yes, ma'am. Yeah, I mean, when I wrote the DNC's Veteran Military Family Candidate Platform back in 2010, when now Senator Kaine got the caucus back up and running, that was one of the pieces of that policy, of that platform. And so we have every Democrat candidate that I support nationwide and in the Commonwealth, we ensure that is in their policy, that their
Fantastic.
States aren't already implementing it.
Wow, that's just great. Josh, I know you have a big event on the National Mall on October 19th. Can you tell the people who's listening, the audience, what it's about? It's in D.C., right?
Yes, ma'am. It's actually, we were talking about the 58th anniversary of the walk, the march, I mean, and it's actually going to be circuiting the reflecting pool. A lot of people, you know, they're a little bit intimidated by having to, you know, wear their knees out and wear their feet out on a marathon run. So what we're doing is we are having people circuit the reflecting pool, and we basically kind of rented out that whole space. It's actually going to be on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial is where the opening ceremonies. Actually, Senator Brown has been nice enough to you know, volunteer to say some remarks about why the topic is so important. And there's live music and stuff like that as well. But, it's going to be happening on the mall, and people are going to be circling the pool.
Where can people go to get involved, Josh? Do they just show up and register that day, or can they go to a website or something?
Right. Yes. Actually, both options are available. And, you know, we suggest that people register beforehand just because that allows you to set up some fundraising efforts. What's interesting about our event is it's actually free to register, because a lot of what we've all been talking about is a lot of people don't know, whether it's on the veteran side, that they don't actually know what programs are available to them, or, you know, the general American public, that they don't know what these guys go through, or, you know, heaven forbid that, you know, people on the Hill don't have perfect information. Even they don't know about, you know, what policies could be helping, you know, these guys suffer less or at least have a livable situation. So it's free to register. The place where you would go to do that is this cool site that we set up. It's called W4WW, and that's for Walk for Wounded Warriors. And that's .kintera, kintera.org. And, you know, it's a great thing because not only is it going to be a great time, you know, in the spirit of the millennials, you know, who I represent, we love going out and doing stuff like the Color Run. People have probably heard of that. The Tough Mudder. We like being a little bit crazy and having a good time. And from what I've seen, a lot of the vets that we've worked with, they also like just that, you know, letting loose and being goofy a little bit. So everyone's going to be coming out in costumes. They're going to be dancing, you know, in gorilla suits to the bands that we have set up. I honestly don't know what people are going to come out in. But
sounds like fun. So,
I'll have to see if I can still fit into my gorilla suit.
Oh, let me tell you. You got to be careful with Michael Brown. He thinks he can fit in a lot of things, and he never does. He can't really. That's from past experience. But I'm joking. Right, Senator Brown? At my wedding, he gave the wrong measurements, and so he was thinking he was like 16, and I don't know, he was in a different size then, but he's a lot of fun.
They tried to put me in the ring bearer's tuxedo.
But he's a lot of fun. That should be really, really great. Now, Captain Sims, how would we get you? Am I right talking to the right gentleman about the books? You're the one that wrote the three books, right? How would we get your books? Is that on Amazon, or are they in the bookstores?
They're in the bookstores, the major bookstores, and Amazon as well. Yes, ma'am.
Can you give us the names of them again?
So the one that's available now is With Honor in Hand.
Okay.
And the second part, which I published independently, it's available too, but it's okay if no one gets that one.
Well, is that a sequel to the first one?
It is.
Or is it?
Okay. Right, four-part series. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, cool. So can they get that on Amazon, or do they have to go to, do you have a website?
Well, they can go through Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Okay.
From what I've been able to see, the bookstore, if it's not in stock, they can get it there to them in 2 days. I need to update my website, my personal website, but if they want to go to my website, www.TyroneSims.com, and let me spell that phonetically because no one spells my name properly, Dango Echo Romeo Romeo Oscar November Sierra India Mike Sierra.com.
Okay, great. Well, that's good. So they can get in contact with you on your website, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Well, you know, we usually take a break and play a song, but at about 7:30. But I see we've gone past that, and I think tonight we should just skip that. Because we, you know, we have these three important people on the show with us, and I think it's more important to hear what they have to say than to hear what Toby Keith has to say about veterans. The next time we have veterans on, we'll play that song.
Yeah,
but let me ask Tammy another question. I know that we were supposed to have Ginger Miller on today, but Ginger unfortunately couldn't make it because she had a prior commitment. But I know she just had an event for the Women's Veterans Interactive Health and Wellness kickoff that you attended yesterday, Tammy. Can you tell us what that was about and how that went?
Yes, actually, Women Veterans Act. I'm sorry. I sit on the board of Women Veterans Interactive. Ginger. This is the second nonprofit that Ginger put together. She's very passionate about women who are homeless, who are displaced, their families, and she's concerned about the wholeness of women. And we've had several events. And yesterday, what we did was we did a health and welfare, and we did yoga for women veterans. And it turned out to be a very wonderful event. We're also having an event November the 8th, 9th, and 10th. And we're going to do a veteran extravaganza. Our special guest is going to be Susie Orman.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah, I want to go there.
Yeah. Susie, she said she's a fan of veterans, and she really wanted to come out and talk to women, especially military, to help us to, you know, work through our budget issues, just be a help to veterans. And so we thought that was really wonderful. We have a weekend slammed with events so we can just celebrate women veterans and military alike. I'm also a member of the Veterans of Foreign Wars, and I really want to talk about that because we're really in a transitional stage right now, and we're looking to recruit younger millennials, like the other speaker said, progressive veterans who's coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan, because I think that we're the new voice of the new veteran, and we need to be able to articulate our needs, and like Teron had talked about earlier, some of the needs that we have, and some of the policies that are in place right now that are not, that we need to have passed. I mean, and I wanted to reiterate some of the policies that he talked about. The in-state one is very important, and that's H.R. 357. And if you can let your listeners know, that is very important that they write their congressman and tell them to support H.R. 357.
What's another 357? Tell us what it is.
Okay, it's offering in-state tuition for eligible veterans in public colleges. The same thing Teron had talked about.
Absolutely.
And Kathleen had just supported when she was talking about the need for soldiers to be able to go and their children to have in-state tuition, because it's not our fault that we get orders to go somewhere in the next 2 years, in the next 3 years. You know, we're doing that so, you know, because we can support our, you know, our mission. The next thing is TRICARE Prime. I don't know if you understand, if you know what that is. TRICARE Prime is our health care.
Right.
And so now when veterans get out, they have decreased the amount of coverage. And so on top of that, if you don't live in the radius of a huge military installation, they will make a step down, and you'll go to, like, the TRICARE standard, which does not give you the same type of health care. So, like, TRICARE Prime is, like, a high option. TRICARE standard is not. And so that's not fair, because just because you choose to live in a rural area, because, you know, when you got out, you should still be eligible for the high option, which is TRICARE Prime. And that bill is H.R. 1971.
Okay.
And the last one I'm concerned about is just the putting veterans funding first. I mean, that's just really to streamline, some of the IT that we need. Some of the stuff that we have is kind of outdated, you know, I mean, especially with when we're talking about, you know, one VA to the next VA, it's amazing how you can go from one VA in one state and go into another VA in another state and your information is not transferred. You know what I mean? They don't know your information in the next state. And so I think the infrastructure for the VA needs to be, you know, upgraded. And so those are things that are really important. And those policies are coming up. And I think that if your listeners will call their legislators and say, hey, put veterans first, whatever legislation that comes up that supports the veteran, put veterans first.
Absolutely. Well, this is crazy. It makes me – I'm sorry, Michael. Senator Brown, I'm honored. You know, when I went over and I saw these military families, I remember one was living in a trailer in a rural part. They didn't get on-base housing because that's always very limited. And their kids were playing in the hot Georgia sun on these white rocks, and they were actually playing underneath the trailer, which was on cinder blocks. I don't understand people, all these insurance guys, all these people that make these policies that decide that they're going to not fund people when they come back or they live in a rural area. They should, they should actually be sent overseas. I mean, I think it's just amazing that people make these policy decisions affecting the families of the veterans and the soldiers, and they don't have a clue, because to me, you guys went over there, you could have lost your life. My commitment should be to you to make sure that you, and I know you're not asking for gold, but you know, you should at least have the services, and you should at least have communication so that you know where their services are wherever you go, and it should follow you. And you know, I just kind of think we need to kick these guys out of Congress who have no clue to what the issues are and get you guys in there. You're all, you know, Tammy, how old are you? Do you mind telling everyone?
Oh, I'm 43.
Okay, hey, that's a perfect age for you to get involved. And you know, and I guess it was, you know, Josh and all of you. You need to be involved to make the decision, because what they, Michael and I, have seen, how many people, I mean, there's a lot of good people, but there's a lot of people making decisions that they have just no clue. And we need you guys in there because you understand the issues and you can just make things so much easier. So, I mean, I hope our audience is as stunned by what you guys have just said to us, the issues that the military families are facing, the not getting the communication or knowing where to go or knowing how to get the services. And these legislation bills that you talked about are so important. Is there a website, Tammy, that maybe the audience could go to that would be able to look at all these issues and kind of get themselves educated?
Thank you. Yes, it's www.zfw.org. And they can, we have, if they go and they click on VFW in D.C., it'll talk about our action corps, the legislation that we are focusing on that help veterans.
Let me tell you that it's as easy as dialing 202-224-2121, which is the switchboard at the Capitol, and asking for your representative or your senator. And, your representative in this case, because these are House, these bills are in the House right now. But call that number and ask for your representative and say, I support H.R. 357. I support H.R. 1971. These, Kathleen will tell you, because she's worked in an office in Congress, that if these guys get 50 calls, it means something to them.
Right.
They pay attention to that. It really doesn't take a lot of pressure to put pressure on these people. So.
And let me add something, because I've noticed a new thing that's happening on the Hill that really makes me angry, that when you place a call, you're not getting – you know, I would place a call. If you do get a live person, ask to talk to the legislative assistant dealing with military issues, number one. Then you want to, if you can't get somebody on, which I've been seeing more and more, is like, well, email us if you want that. Call your local district. Call your state office. Like if it's John McCain, you call, you know, his office in Phoenix, and you talk to somebody there. And if you can't get a live person, call your news station. And say, you know what, I've tried to call my representative in D.C. and in state, and I can't get somebody. Can you help me? And let me tell you, the press loves that kind of thing. And I think we have to start playing a little bit hardcore and a little bit dirty and get these guys to understand that, you know, our taxes are paying for your offices and for your staff, and you need to be responsive to us and what we want you to do.
First of all, everybody needs to understand that Congress has caller ID. So they know when Kathleen's calling, and that's why she's not getting a live person. So don't be discouraged.
Call that's anyone. True. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah,
right.
They call ID, so they know it's you. You know, I can't tell you how important Kathleen and I both think this issue is. You know, I've never met a military person in my entire life that I didn't think was a stand-up person. And it just breaks my heart that when push comes to shove, sometimes we don't stand up for them the way they've stood up for us. So I can't encourage you enough. When I was a boy, my dad, who was a combat veteran, taught me that the first thing I say to anybody in uniform before I even say hello is thank you for your service. Because without the service of these brave men and women and the people that continue to help them, like Tammy and Teron and Josh, we wouldn't be able to enjoy all the freedoms we do in this country. So I want to thank each one of you for coming. We're getting close to the end of the hour, and I want to give each of you the ability to say one last thing before we go on off the air. Let's start with you, Josh.
And Josh, just one quick thing. When you guys make your comment, please give again your website or a way in which people can contact you.
Right. So I was a little embarrassed because I forgot. We're just having our huge Facebook promotion, and I was like, oh, my gosh, I didn't mention the Facebook page. So
great.
The BF Wounded Warrior Trust, we're on Facebook. That's where you can go and find out all about our events, which are, at this point, a lot of it's located in D.C., which I, from what I understand, a lot of the viewership is from D.C., you know, with the Senator Brown connection.
Yeah.
And I hate to put in another plug and put Tammy on the spot again with the whole policy thing, but another long-standing goal that the BF Wounded Warrior Trust has is to institute a National Wounded Veterans Day akin to Veterans Day, because something that we're all kind of touching on is that, you know, one of the greatest tragedies is that people are unaware, and these you know, honorable heroes, young men and women, and even, you know, people from the Vietnam era that we're still supporting, they just get forgotten. So, and of course, to make that happen, you guys know better than most. You got to go through so many hoops, and it helps when the people who are holding those hoops are people who actually understand why they should hold those. So,
well, that's really, why we're going to get Tammy to run.
And all of you guys, all you guys are going to run.
Captain, you want to say something before we get off the air? We've got about 30 seconds left.
Well, sir, yeah, I was just going to caveat onto what Tammy was saying. For those who are listening, don't assume that your elected officials are necessarily pro-veteran, whether they say so or not. You can go and do a search. As I always tell people when I surrogate for candidates, you can do a search on your elected officials to see if they actually are supporting those pieces of legislation that you're in favor of. So if particular candidates are saying one thing, you can discover whether or not they're doing another.
That's great information.
That's very true. Absolutely.
Let me ask you, Tammy, does the VFW rate candidates like the NRA does or other groups? Does the VFW tell you what candidates are good and which ones aren't?
What we do is we just tell you what they voted on. We don't really we just tell you
they've
voted on.
Yeah. All right.
Were you going to say? Yeah, you guys should have a rating. I mean, let me tell you, these guys who go out there are pro-military. I mean, we got to follow how they vote after the people have come home. And then if they don't vote the way they should, then we get them out.
That's right.
That's right.
Yeah, everybody needs to remember that it's okay to hate war and love gold. You know, that's the way I feel. We've got to stand up for our soldiers. The most patriotic thing you can do is keep war from happening, so you keep your soldiers at home. But thanks, and join us next week. And thanks, everybody, for being on.
Yes, and let me just say that I have never felt more prouder and more safe than since I've been, you know, actually had contact with the soldiers and their families, because they're just an incredible group of people. And I just tell you, you guys do a great job. And thank you so much. And we look forward. We're going to have you guys back on. We'll follow this legislation and we'll follow these guys. And we'll have you back on to talk about it.
Thanks, folks. See you next week. In the capital of this nation, 100 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.